Welcome back to the front page on the Pulse. Lots of things going on internationally. The focus is definitely on India at the moment, for rightfully for health reasons. But simmering in the background, there is the continuation with Australian relationships with China that were put to the test. Oh, it seems like 12 months ago now when we first upset China and they put some trade restrictions on, and nothing seems to have improved too much. And when we've got a couple of members of government, including a minister, talking about potential military conflict, that gets me a little concerned. And a lady who joins us regularly to talk about China relations, Leonie McKeon, good morning to you.
Good morning, Rob.
When we had you last on, we talked about the 36 strategies of war, which have now been turned into business and social implications. I think it was very good last time that what you were able to do is pick one or two of those out and put them into real context with real issues that are happening at the moment. And I'd like, if possible, to do that again with you today, because the circumstances that are happening with China not talking to, or ministers claiming they can't get onto their relevant ministers in China, they won't answer calls. It's a bit concerning for we on the ground. Could you just put some things in context about what might be going on in the diplomatic space?
Sure, Rob. Well, the 36 Chinese strategies, just to recap, they are like idioms, like don't cry over spilt milk. So every Chinese person knows these. We know don't cry over spilt milk. We know it's an idiom. We know what it means. We can put it in context. It doesn't mean that someone is standing there crying and the milk is spilling. So there's 36 of these Chinese strategies. They're derived from the Art of War, the famous Sun Tzu text, which is 2,500 years old, still very, very relevant in the contemporary business world. So what I do is I take each strategy and I give them a contemporary business example. And once you know how these strategies work, it's really easy then to see what is going on. So today we're going to talk about strategy 3, murder with a borrowed knife. Now, just like don't cry over spilt milk doesn't mean that someone is crying and the milk is spilling, this doesn't mean that someone is murdering someone with a borrowed knife. So sometimes people hear these strategies and they take them literally. So that's why we need to understand the code that underpins the strategy. Now, murder with a borrowed knife is very much related to the hierarchical nature of Chinese culture, meaning that in China, you would not call your lecturer by their first name. Often you don't call your boss by their first name because the culture is very hierarchical. In Australia, we're much more egalitarian. So that's one major difference. We go and try to communicate with China in this egalitarian attitude, even though our ministers, you know, the top ministers are trying to communicate with the top ministers. It's just not working. Okay, so murder with a borrowed knife. Now that means that, let's compare it with Western culture, Australian culture in this sense. So generally in a room of business people, we know who the head person is because that's the person who really says a lot and, you know, and gives orders. This kind of attitude. So we sort of know straight away who that head person is. Now, in Chinese culture, it is the person that moves the least and says the least is the head person. Why? Because they are getting the person who is just below them in hierarchy to do the work, like to answer the difficult questions, maybe to ask the difficult questions. Things don't go really to the top until the very last minute. So I want the listeners to think of murder with a borrowed knife like the king on the chessboard. So the king on the chessboard is the most powerful piece. And the king on the chessboard is the one that's left, the one that can checkmate. But the king on the chessboard moves the least. It moves the least of all the pieces, because it gets all the other pieces to do the work. And that's what happens with murder with a borrowed knife. So when you're in a room with Chinese people, with Chinese business people, if you want to locate the head person, you know that's the person who moves the least and says the least, but you do not actually communicate with them. You would communicate with the person that is just below that person in hierarchy. So what's going on with the situation with China and Australia? We are continually hearing that we've called China, they're not picking up the phone. Now, if murder with a borrowed knife is in practice, now remember, every Chinese person knows these strategies. They are absolutely fundamental in the culture. It's like asking an Australian person, have you heard of Vegemite? Have you seen a kangaroo? You know, it's so fundamental. So when communicating with China, in my opinion, with murder with a borrowed knife, we should actually be using the person that is below the person in hierarchy in Australia. So, for example, maybe the person that is just below Dan Tehan, to communicate with the person that is below the same person in China. And then you gradually go through that person in communication. If you go from leader to leader, generally that won't work. So murder with a borrowed knife, I see, is in action. And a lot of people make the mistake of, you know, they go into a room and they see the person that's not communicating that much. They're sitting there. They mightn't even be dressed as glamorously as the other people. However, they are the most powerful person. And it's quite difficult sometimes to locate them. We sort of, you know, we see this through Western eyes. And that's the difference. We need to understand their strategies so we can see how people are really communicating and how we can then get our message across, how we can get that phone to ring back to us.
Leonie, the change that concerned me greatly was the mention of conflict. So a double-edged question to you. What do you sense would have been the motivation or agenda behind key Australian officials making those public statements? And secondly, and more importantly, how would they have been received in China?
Right, okay. Well, the issue of conflict. Now, let's step back to when the relationship first started to deteriorate. It actually initially started to deteriorate when we caused loss of face with the inquiry, the publicly announced inquiry about the COVID-19 virus. So that was the initial thing. And we talked about the relationship deteriorating. Okay, we've got a word, deterioration. Then I start to hear the word enemy. So now we're constructing in a discourse, in a linguistic discourse, we are constructing a new kind of pattern. And now I hear in the last probably month or so, we are using the word war. We are now constructing something that is not even there. So, you know, by constructing this, now how is this seen by China? Well, you know, if China started to use the word war to Australia, if they started to actually use that word, I don't think we would be that happy.
No, probably not.
So I think what's happening is, you know, we're throwing out these words, and I know that when you start to construct a word and start to construct a discourse with that word, then people start to think that way. Rob, I went to my exercise physiologist, the man's 35, last week to get a new gym program, and he said to me, Leonie, do you think we'll go to war with China? He's a very intelligent man. And I said, Matt, you know, to construct this to the ordinary Australian people and to have this idea is, we don't need this. You know, it's not the way that we're going to, by using these words, this is not the way that we're going to be able to mend this very damaged relationship. Now we're just putting fuel to this fire, and it's a fire that's burning very fiercely, and we need to get a big bucket of water and drop it on it.
Yeah, there's a couple of from my movement around society, there's a couple of responses to this within the run-of-the-mill folk. One is pride. There's great pride. We're standing up to China. We're not letting the schoolyard bully influence. But, of course, the other one, and the most common one, is fear. Because if you're talking about starting military conflict with a country the size of China, we're not going to win. So immediately people become fearful. It seems odd that it was a motivation on one part. Could it have been to try and win that that Australian strength and unity that we're standing up to the bully? Would that have been a motivation?
Well, it could have been, and I think if the reality is that China is much more powerful than us, and I don't know where we get this idea that we're going to stand up to China and we're going to, it's like you said, the bullies in the schoolyard. And I think there's some idea in people's heads about war. We often have seen, all the soldiers marching on the television, sometimes in China, and they're all marching and singing, and, there's thousands, there's millions of them, and I think we've got this idea that, China is going to come in and invade. That's not how China operates. Remember, they operate strategically. Remember, they have the 36 Chinese strategies, and they understand strategically, how to get back at us. But all this tit for tat, we're going to stand up, we're going to get back at you, it's like playing with someone who is so good at sport and we can't really play. So we really need to, to talk and to step back and to see. I mean, I don't really even hear now that we're going to try and mend the relationship. We're just going forth with these different things, ripping up agreements. I mean, the Belt and Road agreement apparently was. Going to be or has already been torn up a couple of weeks ago by our foreign minister. I don't think that was necessary because the Belt and Road isn't even a binding agreement. It doesn't have any legal binding, so it would have been better just to leave it.
Just a bit of grandstanding again.
Yeah, instead of just trying to upset Chinese people, and that really did upset them. So, just taking an agreement and ripping it up, but it's not worth doing for what we've actually now have to deal with.
Yeah, it's measured concern. We know at this stage it's probably just diplomatic posturing, but after more than 12 months of doing the same thing for the same result and still putting some of our key markets at risk, and I suppose barley, wine and lobster are the three that are most affected, and certainly the wine industry looks like the one out of the three that's most again. So there has been an effect on parts of the Australian environment with no real attempt to make any change. In fact, a couple of bits of chucking petrol at it in recent times is really quite concerning. Do you see a change of diplomacy on the horizon anywhere?
Not really, no. And I think, it's obvious to me whatever is being done is not working. Because, China is getting more upset. Australia is being very reactive, not proactive. There's no China strategy. It's just let's react, let's rip up something, let's publicly talk about things.
Within your role, you obviously engage with Chinese folk, whether through that be business, socially, or whatever the case may be, over the relationships that you've made. Is this talked about in those conversations?
Well, interestingly enough, for example, there's two layers to this. People who are, Chinese people who are importing wine from Australia, the people who have been doing this with companies for many, many years are slightly embarrassed about what's happening, and they continue the strong relationship they have with the wine company. But what the wine companies are finding is that it's difficult to develop new relationships. So the relationship, in answer to your question, Rob, the relationships that were already there are solid. Most of them are solid with Australia because they go back so far. because we've been really opened up to, China has been opened up to the West this time, say this time, because this is not, power is nothing new to China. Probably since Deng Xiaoping came into power, which was 1977. So some of these companies have been dealing with China for a very long time, and, you know, those connections are solid. And many Chinese people, see Australia as, you know, the safe environment, the clean, green environment. It really depends what is happening. Sometimes you see this on a group scale. Oh, you know, students are being told this, but I suppose if you went to China and you talked to the average person on the street, what would they say? I haven't done that yet because I haven't been able to travel. But what I understand is the relationships that are already there are there, and the developing of new. And it also depends on what industry you're in, because if you're in something like IT, aged care, childcare, any of those industries that are anything to do with health, are quite sought after, obviously iron ore.
Yep.
If you're obviously, you know, if you're trying to export luxury items that China doesn't actually need, China doesn't need wine, they don't need lobster, they don't need butter. I mean, these are all items which they can get elsewhere. But things like iron ore and some of our health products, our biotech products, things like that. So it really depends where you sit in the market as, you know, how hard you've been hit, or are you still continuing to do business with China? I mean, I advise people to be careful of what they hear in the media, because, you know, you can look at this stuff and you can go, oh, you know, gee, I don't want to go there. But you just have to really almost separate what's going on politically and continue with your trade.
Yeah.
You know, and sort of try to say, okay, well, that's what's happening. You know, it's like anything that happens. Sometimes we hear things in workplaces, we hear things, you know, about, you know, domestic violence and everything, you know, and those kinds of things, yes, they're terrible. However, you know, they may not be happening in your workplace. They may not be happening in your house. So you have to understand it's going on, but understand that you have a different relationship.
Yeah. We've run out of time, Leonie. Next time I want to dissect a little bit more of the basic cultural differences, because this has come up a lot, is sure. Something that we say can be deemed offensive in China and vice versa. And it's needing to understand some of those differences, which no doubt you've lived and experienced and dealt with over many years. So,
sure, that'd be excellent.
Yeah, we'll work on that as well. Thank you so much again for your time. Really enjoy our chats, and we'll talk to you in a few more weeks.
Bye for now.
Thanks, Leonie.
Bye.
Leonie McKeon from Chinese Business and Consultancy. Love those chats. It's an interesting subject, and it's this odd posturing at the moment from both sides as to how to deal with what has been, well, I would have thought an avoidable diplomatic conflict, I might call it, at this particular stage, but it's certainly affecting us a lot more than China.